Good afternoon, Juno. It's 2:59 p.m. It's just about time to start another episode of the Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. And on the show, we'll be talking with Jesse Herman Haywood about Friday night's Fish Fest at the Twisted Fish. Ralph Steves will be here to highlight the free tours at the NOAA facility. Lena Gilbertson will share the details about the latest Big Brothers Big Sisters fundraiser, and Annie Klein will be here to celebrate the release of the new brew from the Alaskan Brewing Company. Well, I'm looking forward to that. These guests, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more for Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A settlement between the Indian Health Service and an Alaska Tribal Health Organization was announced late last week. $153 million is the amount that will be paid for back contract support costs due to the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium from the IHS. Lori Townsend reports.
The settlement clears up a 15-year backlog of underpayments to the Anchorage facility. Lloyd Miller is the lead attorney who fought for the tribal back payments. He says it's similar to the recent settlement with health organization South Central Foundation, also based in Anchorage, with one big difference.
What distinguishes it is that it is the largest settlement in history ever achieved between a tribe or tribal organization in the United States.
Miller says because the health service contracts to run ANTHC are large, there have also been large liabilities that have accumulated because of the shortage in contract funding.
Because the federal agency, the Indian Health Service, has not been paying the full contract amount that was due to operate the hospital. As a result, cuts have been made in some years. New service lines have not been opened as rapidly as they could have been. Revenues from Medicare and Medicaid have suffered because services have not been provided. And these are all of the elements that went into the settlement with the Indian Health Service.
Miller has been fighting for tribal contract payments based on U.S. Supreme Court decisions in 2005 and 2012. Miller says President Obama has asked Congress for full contract support for tribal contracts going forward. There have been between $300 million and $400 million in IHS settlements in Alaska and nearly $600 million nationally. There are still numerous back claims left to settle in Alaska and across the nation. For National Native News, I'm Lori Townsend in Anchorage.
Tribal and federal officials discussed access to the Internet this week. As KGLP's Rachel Cobb reports, the leader of the Federal Communications Commission toured Acma Pueblo in New Mexico.
Monday's meetings between New Mexico Senator Tom Udall, FCC Chair Tom Wheeler, and tribal leaders from the Pueblo of Acoma centered around the need for improvement in broadband access in order to expand education and foster economic development in the Pueblo as well as throughout Indian country. The Acoma Learning Center's director, Nolan Valdo, noted that the service in greatest demand by the Pueblo's students is e-books.
We have 126 titles. The children go through that and they read using their iPads, Kindles, and whatnot, the latest technology out there to access this. But if we don't have a reliable resource of networking, there's no way they can access it from home.
FCC Chair Wheeler, who has faced mixed criticism on the subject of net neutrality, wants policies in place to ensure not only equal access, but the right of communities to find lower cost access.
We want to make sure that there is open access and somebody can't establish hierarchies or charge you extra for what you're already buying. What we're doing when it comes to the E-rate program, we're going to have a new set of rules that will make the process simpler, but we'll also establish standards for what libraries like this should be paying for their connectivity.
For National Native News, this is Rachel Cobb.
A Cherokee Nation citizen has been named a champion of change by the White House. Daryl Legge struggled with drugs. He turned his life around and now runs a re-entry program to assist Native people overcome similar obstacles, including through a new program where former prisoners can get back on their feet upon release and find jobs and housing. The champions of change were honored Monday at the White House. On this day in 1955, the Federal Program for Indian Health Services was transferred to the Public Health Service, Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, the agency responsible for the country's human resources. The program was first under the War Department, then the Interior Department. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at nativevote.org, brought to you by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And the Juneau afternoon continues at 3:05 p.m. here. I've got Jessie Herman Haywood in the studio with me, and she's going to talk about Friday night's Fish Fest at the Twisted Fish.
Thursday night.
Oh, it's Thursday. It said Friday in here on the copy, but Thursday night. Okay.
Thursday, July 3rd.
All right. Well, everybody better get that straight then. It's not Friday. It's Thursday night. All right, and this is not an eatery. Well, this is an eatery, but we're not eating fish, though. Tell everybody what the Fish Fest is about.
Okay, it's the 5th annual Fish Fest. We've done this for 5 years now. It's the biggest July 3rd party of the summer. It's super fun. This year starts at 9 o'clock. We've got The Business Playing, which is a funk band from New Orleans. Really awesome, talented band. They've got horns. They're going to be playing probably an hour and a half to 2 hour set Thursday, 9 o'clock. And then following that will be the File Jerks. They are local DJs, but we say hometown heroes because they're killing it. They're doing big things. And Scotty McKinnon, is DJ Shorthand. He's living in Seattle, and he's DJing full-time and making a go at it, doing really cool things. And then it's also DJ Astronomar, who's been living in L.A. and has just got back from a worldwide tour, and he's doing really cool things. So it's the File Jerks, but separately there it's DJ Astronomar in Shorthand, and they're going to be playing lots of electronic music, really fun for dancing. If you want to dance, it's definitely the place to be for the 3rd. And then fireworks to follow, happening at midnight. It's going to be fun. There's 21 and over event, of course. It's a KXL fundraiser, so $5 at the door goes to KXL, and it should be a really kick-ass good time.
All right, and you said this is the fifth year we've done this. Okay, how has it played out over the last 4 years?
It's been really good, considering that we haven't had a nice 3rd of July in 8 years. But usually we get, probably like around 1,000 people walking through, 800,000 people, not all at once, of course. Most of the time it's usually a couple hundred people, but the night starts early. The band The Business is a little bit mellower, not as dancey as the File Jerks, but great funk music. It'll be fun. I would say it's probably definitely the most happening place to be as far as live music.
Okay, and the timing is such that it's probably going to conclude before the fireworks start, right?
Nope.
It's going to be running while the fireworks are starting.
Yeah, so we've got the opening band. They'll go play for an hour and a half to 2 hours, and then the File Jerks go on, and then there's the, small countdown, and then the fireworks happen, and then they keep playing, and they usually go till probably like 2 o'clock. Like, they usually shut down a little bit early before our board closes, but they play all night.
Okay. Was there a process in selecting the business to come up here?
The band?
Yes.
That was something that Risha had lined up. I know that Phil, the saxophone player in the band, is spent a bunch of time in Juneau. I don't know if you could call him a local, but I think he connected the dots with Risha, and that they're doing like a Northwest tour, and they wanted to make their way up to Alaska, and it made sense. Juneau likes good live local music, and the business is going to be pretty cool.
All right. Sounds wonderful.
Check out our Facebook page for Fish Fest 2014. We've got links to all the bands, and you can listen to the music.
Okay, and we're going to do a little of that in just a second. But again, it's Thursday night, because our 4th of July is actually celebrated the night before.
No, this is the 3rd of July. It says that on the poster.
We do our fireworks and stuff in Juneau on the 3rd.
Yeah.
And the reason they started doing that is because the miners had the 4th of July off, and they did on the night of the 3rd so they could have the day of the 4th with their families and not be out late, because they had to be at the mine again on the 5th. So that's how that whole tradition of doing the fireworks on the 3rd started.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
It's been like that probably since the beginning of time in Juneau.
Yeah.
I think if you live somewhere
since
else,
the pioneer times,
you do
yeah.
the fireworks on the 4th, but. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the rest of the world does that. We do it a little differently here.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree with you. The weather's been crummy for most of the last 5 years. You know, when we've had the 4th of July, I remember seeing the fireworks go off into the clouds and blowing up in the clouds. And you'd see the clouds change color to pink and green and stuff. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting. They're actually, you know, going off in the clouds versus, you know, being able to see them in clear air. So, yeah, not really spectacular. But there have been a couple of ones that were actually fairly decent where we had overcast skies, but the fireworks actually went off, and they did, you know, they did a very good job. It's a great party every year, though. It's always a wonderful event. But, yeah, remind everybody where they can go to get information.
You can go to our Facebook page. It's FishFest 2014. You can also go to kxl.org or ktoo.org. There's a button, and the night starts at 9 o'clock. It's the business opening, a funk band from New Orleans, and then it's the File Jerks, which is DJ Astronomar and DJ Shorthand playing electronic music. It's going to be a great time, 21 and over event. Hope to see you there Thursday.
Okay, Jesse Herman Haywood, thank you for being our guest in the studio. And now I'm going to play one song from the business. I might get to another one later in the hour, but this one's called Seven Nation Army.
reminder to Capital Transit and Caravan passengers. Buses and vans will not be operating on Friday, July 4th in recognition of the Independence Day holiday. Full service will resume on Saturday, July 5th. The contact number for Capital Transit is 789-6901 and Caravan is 463-6194. The drivers and staff at Capital Transit and Caravan would like to wish everyone a happy and safe Independence Day.
And I'm back with my two guests here. I thought it was going to be one, but there's actually two now. Ralph Steves and Julie Spiegel, and they're from the NOAA facility here in Juneau. Welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
All right. And you're here to highlight the free tours that are conducted at the NOAA facility. So, Julie, a little bit of background. NOAA, I know what it stands for, but tell everybody else what the four letters stand for.
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah, that's it. Another government agency here, and you guys do very good work. Tell us how NOAA functions here in Juneau and what you guys are actively researching.
Oh, thanks. So NOAA is a government agency, and we have different line offices. The line office that most people are familiar with is the National Weather Service. We are from the National Marine Fisheries Service, so that's the fisheries line office. And fisheries are really special here in Alaska. Our fisheries here are considered to be among the best managed, most sustainable fisheries on the planet, and they contribute billions of dollars to the U.S. economy and actually employ more people in the state of Alaska than any other private industry. So what NOAA Fisheries does, especially at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center and the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute, is the science behind the success of Alaska's fisheries.
Okay, and how successful have we been?
Oh, we are very successful, like I said. We're considered to be among the best managed, most sustainable fisheries on the planet, and we contribute billions of dollars to the U.S. economy and the largest private employer in the state of Alaska. So very, very successful fisheries here.
Ken, a key word right there, too, she used was sustainability, and that's what we try to accomplish. We're not the ones that actually manage the fisheries, but we supply the science to the agencies that do manage the fisheries. But that's what we're seeking, to get to a level of a harvest where we can continue to go back year after year and still be able to enjoy that kind of protein that's at the same levels that we do on an annual basis. Sustainability is important.
Okay, and I know that from doing a little research that you not only have an aquarium there, so tell everybody a little bit about the aquarium.
Well, when you go into the lobby, and you don't, there's no reason to sign up any. There's signs in there to say sign up if you come in, but that's if you're going to go visit one of the scientists or if you're going to do one of our tours. But it's open to the public business hours Monday through Friday just to go into the lobbies. And there's seven aquariums in there. They're not gigantic, but they're beautiful. They're stocked with fish that are indigenous to this area. And there's signs there, and then I'm around for 3 hours a day where I can answer questions about what we're exactly looking at. And then there's also an area upstairs that looks out on the back waterways behind our building that there's telescopes and that kind of thing. And that's just open to the public. You can come in any time of the day and enjoy that part of the facility on your own and go out on your own free will and time.
Okay. And best of all, tell them what the cost is.
Well, you already paid. Everybody's paid their income taxes. So from there on in, it's a free experience.
Yeah, so essentially free. There's not that many free things to do here except breathe air and walk around. But
actually, you know, Ken, just for a moment, people ask me all the time about what to do in Juneau. And I tell them an interesting day would to be call up, make a reservation with us for a 1 o'clock tour. And then after that, you take a ride out to St. Teresa's. And then after that, you take a drive out to the Arboretum, and there's a nice slice of Juneau, and you haven't spent any money.
It sure is. All right, there are a few other free things. All right, and you do have the Science on a Sphere as part of the tour that you conduct. It's 40 minutes. what you conduct, showing people around, and then there's a 20-minute presentation of science on a sphere.
And I don't want to mislead anybody. Actually, it takes about 55 minutes to go through the tour, especially like today. I had a full group of 12, and you can only get so many people through a door at the same time, plus additional questions. So we actually spent an hour today on a tour. Then there's a 5-minute recess, and then the Science on the Sphere this summer is running about 25 minutes, and what it's covering is information about the other services provided by NOAA other than fisheries, because we've already talked about that for an hour. But we have information on there about the weather forecasting service, tsunami warning services, ocean currents, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of new data on there about climate change. And like I say, it runs about 25 minutes. So the whole experience runs around an hour and a half.
Okay. For those not familiar with Science on a Sphere, we probably still have one at the Alaska State Museum, but the museum is shut down for reconstruction in the new facility right now. So,
well, Science on the Sphere was created about 10 years ago by NOAA for outreach education. And what it is, it's a globe that's suspended from the ceiling, six feet in diameter. There's four projectors that can project images on it in a 3D fashion. And there's a library of about 400 images that we can pick and choose from. About the planets and various moons in our solar system, the dynamics of our planet, the currents of the ocean, the atmospheric temperatures, things like that. And then you can tell a story. And so what I've done is I've created this story that has a beginning, a middle, and end, gone to the library and pulled up images to help us get the story out to the general public about the topics I just mentioned.
Yeah, that's a very unique way to present information.
It's a wonderful tool, absolutely.
Yeah, 6-foot ball, and you project just about anything that you want onto it.
Yeah, and we've learned to actually make some of our own images, too. So if it's not in the library, we actually have the capability of making some of our own. And there's a gentleman down at the federal building that has already contributed some of the images that we're using.
All right, and again, remind everybody where the NOAA building is located.
Sure, we're 2 miles beyond the ferry docks. And it's the Point Lena Road that turns to the left as we're going north, right by the ballparks there. And you drive 2 miles beyond that once you've made your turn. And don't turn left, don't turn right. You're going to go up and down and turn, you know, curves here and there. But you're going to come to a gated fence section. And that it's labeled very clearly then that you're at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. And you go through that gate. Now, the first building you encounter is the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries. You go past that and continue going up to the hill, and then you'll come to the NOAA facility. And you just come in the main entrance, and my office is right off the lobby there, and I'll be the first one to greet you.
Very good. And what time do you open for people to come in?
I work 3 hours a day, but I get there around 11 o'clock, and first thing I do is check my phone. If anybody's called, I'll put their names down. This time of year, I had a full tour today, for example. We can only take 12 at a time because we do go into some confined locations. And then I'm there right up to the tour time at 1 o'clock, and then I'm there at the end of the tour for probably another half an hour, 45 minutes. So I end up putting about 4 hours out there. But I'm there at the beginning and the end to answer the phone and make reservations and answer any questions that I get along the way.
All right, and the NOAA website, Julie, do you want to give that out?
The NOAA website is alaskafisheries.noaa.gov.
Okay, and that's where I found the information about the tour, too. It's on there. And, Ralph, the phone number that they can call if they want to make reservations for the free tour.
Yes, 789-6050. That's 789-6050.
Okay, Ralph, Steve, and Julie Spiegel, thank you very much for being our guests in the studio today.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks for having us, Ken.
The clinic is closed and you or a loved one don't feel well, or you have a health-related question that can't wait. What do you do? Here's the solution. Starting July 1st, Search will have a free after-hours nurse triage line for our patients in Juneau. Search's free after-hours service is available by calling 1-800-613-0560. For life-threatening emergencies, please call 911.
This message brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 1st of July, 2014. The U.S. Postal Service introduced zip codes on this day, 1963 Zone Improvement Plan. It was in 1983 they rolled out ZIP Plus 4, which added a hyphen and four additional digits to the end of the code to speed things up even more. Zip codes start with the zeros in the Northeast and get bigger as you move south and west. 1979, on this day, Sony introduced the Walkman, the portable cassette player. There had been cassette players around for a while, but Sony miniaturized it, made it portable. There was no external speaker. You needed headphones. It weighed 14 ounces, had a blue and silver chassis, and two headphone jacks so you could listen with a friend. It's the birthday of novelist Jean Stafford, born Covina, California, 1915, author of numerous novels, including The Mountain Lion, and also collected stories of Jean Stafford, which won the Pulitzer Prize when it came out in 1969. She died 10 years later and left her entire estate to her cleaning woman. It's the birthday of the man who told you to omit needless words. Omit needless words. William Strunk Jr., born Cincinnati, 1869, taught English at Cornell, where he published his little book, The Elements of Style. One of his students was E.B. White, who revised and expanded Strunk's book. It has sold millions of copies. And it's the birthday of the French novelist George Sand, born Lucille Aurore Dupin in Paris, 1804. She was raised by her grandmother, sent off to a convent to be educated, wanted to become a nun, then went to Paris, lived with her mother, got married, had two children. Her husband drank too much, was unfaithful, the marriage deteriorated. Lucille fell in love with other men, including the novelist Jules Sandeau, and while they were together, they co-wrote a novel, which was published under Sandeau's pseudonym, J. Sand. The publisher asked for another book. Lucille had written one, and she published it under the name Georges Sand. It was the novel Indiana. It was a big success. Georges Sand wrote more than 90 novels, 35 plays, a multi-volume autobiography, was one of the most famous women of her time, famous for wearing men's clothing, smoking cigars, and for her long string of lovers, which included Frédéric Chopin. She was friends with Turgenev and Flaubert, Zola, Balzac. Georges Sand, who said, "The world will know and understand me someday, but if that day does not arrive, it does not greatly matter. I shall have opened the way for other women." Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson. The soul selects her own society. The soul selects her own society, then shuts the door on her divine majority. Obtrude no more. Unmoved, she notes the chariots pausing at her low gate. Unmoved, an emperor is kneeling upon her mat. I've known her from an ample nation. Choose one, then close the valves of her attention like stone. Emily Dickinson's poem, The Soul Selects Her Own Society. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Summertime is on, but it's still time to sign up for fall classes at the University of Alaska Southeast. Hot off the press is the UAS Fall 2014 course listing. Find it in public places like cafes and libraries, and on the UAS Auk Lake campus. It's full of e-learning and on-campus classes in career education, arts and science, education and management. and you can always find the UAS course schedule online at uas.alaska.edu/schedule. This message is brought to you by the University of Alaska Southeast.
I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host on the Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, and my next guest is Lena Gilbertson. She's going to share the details about the latest Big Brothers and Big Sisters fundraiser. Hi, Lena. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. You?
I'm doing fine. Okay. Give everybody the details on the fundraiser.
So what we're doing now is we're doing a raffle. We've been doing the summer raffle for the last couple of years, and this year we are just raffling off a whole lot of Alaska Airlines miles. So our first prize is 100,000 Alaska Airlines miles. Our second prize is 50,000, and the third is 25,000.
All right. And how do people participate in the raffle?
The staff and some of our volunteers are selling tickets. We're selling them out of the office. We're right downtown on Seward Street. You give us a call. We'll be at various grocery stores and events around town in the summer. It doesn't end until September 15th, so...
All right, just in time to take your miles and go to Hawaii.
Exactly.
When it's raining and dreary out here.
Yeah.
All right, now, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, how long has this been running here in Alaska and in Juneau particularly?
We actually just had our 40th anniversary in Alaska, which is very exciting. In Juneau, it's just a little under 40 years that we've been in Juneau. We've definitely grown the program a lot since then. Right now we've got about 120 matches between bigs and littles in town, and we usually serve around 200 kids per year.
All right, and we were just going to get into that. What qualifications do people need to be a big brother or a big sister?
Our big brothers and our big sisters are just basically adults in town that have a little bit of time and have some desire to give some time to a child. You really don't have to have any special qualifications. We really emphasize that it's about being a friend to a child. You're not a babysitter. You're not a teacher. You're just kind of a friend, a mentor, but a friend, yeah. So just the desire to have some fun with the kid, I guess.
And for those listening that might want to get into this, how much time per week or per month are we looking at?
It really depends on the program. Typically, it's around 2 to 4 times a month. We have our school program, which is just during the school year, and that's once a week where you go to a kid's school and spend just an hour a week at their school. It's usually actually a little less than an hour. And then in the community program, it's more flexible. You kind of decide, you and your little brother or little sister decide how many times you want to get together per month. But like I said, we recommend 2 to 4 times. And, for whatever amount of time you want to get together, it depends on what you're doing.
All right, and what impact has Big Brothers and Big Sisters had here?
The kids in our programs have a lot of really cool things happen. A lot of times bigs don't necessarily know that they're making a difference, but just giving some time, just focusing on that child can really make a difference. A lot of kids improve in self-confidence. A lot of them actually end up doing better in school. They have that one thing that maybe keeps them interested in school, especially if they're in the school program. They have this friend that shows up once a week and wants to hang out with them. So, like I said, confidence. A lot of them just need kind of another positive adult role model in their life, and that in itself can keep them on the right track.
Right. And do you have any local success stories that you can share? Any particular, you don't have to name specific names.
But right, just... yeah, and I won't. But, yeah, we have a lot of cool stories. Recently, there was a little brother. I'm not sure if he's still matched, but when he was matched in the program, he was very shy. He was matched with a big brother, and they started doing things together, and his mom said that his confidence really just improved 200%, I think she said. They went to an art activity, and he got super interested in art. And so he ended up actually going to an art camp, I think. And he just found this thing that he was really passionate about that he otherwise maybe wouldn't have. And so he found that through his big brother. So I think that in itself is a success. You never know where he'll end up later, but I think just little things like that.
Well, definitely. I think that that a lot of kids are looking for mentors, somebody to look up to, somebody that's an example and is just willing to spend time and, outside of their parent-child relationship.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and especially, I can't remember that child's particular situation, but some of the young boys, especially in our programs, don't have a positive male role model in their life. So that can be a really good thing for some of these boys. You know, maybe if they're, you know, they live with a single mother, it's a really cool thing to have someone that can, you know, take them out fishing if their mother doesn't have the time to do that. So
definitely,
yeah,
it's more just spending time with them and, mm-hmm. you know, letting them know that, hey, you know, there's somebody else that cares about you and,
exactly.
you know, is willing to spend time with you and just, yeah, take them out, do things with them and get their confidence level up. Because, yeah, again, like some of these are in single parent families and,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, I don't want to steal your thunder here, though. You're the one that wants to talk about this.
No, you're absolutely right.
Well, you know, I can remember, you know, having a few people that I looked up to when I was, you know, going through junior high and high school. And, you know, you obviously catered to some kids prior to that level, but
mm-hmm.
I developed an interest in aviation because I had somebody that was actually a friend of the instructor I had that was teaching the aviation course at high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he got me out and got me interested in aviation and said, you know, well, I heard that you're thinking about going into the Air Force. Well, listen, kid, here's what you need to get into if you're qualified to do it. These are the two jobs that you really want to do, because
mm-hmm.
otherwise the rest of them are grunt jobs and you might wind up working 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
Whereas these jobs, you know, are ones, I'll tell you what they are, is load master and air traffic controller. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, I chose the latter, and I've been in the air traffic control biz since I was 18.
Yeah.
But it was because of, I'll tell you who he is, Al Hubler, and he was a certified flight instructor, plus he'd been in the air traffic field before,
mm-hmm.
and he told me, hey, this is what you need to do. So it's also a process of steering kids towards things that they might not necessarily have embraced as an interest.
Absolutely.
Or as a potential career.
Yeah, and even if it's not as blatant as saying this is what you need to do, sometimes
right.
just being a model,
yes.
you know, maybe your big brother or your big sister has a job that you think is really cool, or maybe they went to college and they were able to travel and do these cool things, and you think, oh, wow, I want to do that when I'm older.
Absolutely, because
so,
they're able
yeah.
to relate some of the experiences they've had and successes that they've had in their lives. And,
right.
You know, it may present an avenue to a child that they may not have thought of previously, and
exactly.
suddenly it's like, oh, like the one that you related to me about the art, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, wow, I never really thought about that, and suddenly it's, yeah, I think I might be interested in that, and then suddenly they find they've got an aptitude for that particular interest that you've shown them.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And we tried to do a lot of activities through Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We organize monthly activities that, you know, we do different things like art or kayaking or, you know, different things that can also help pique an interest. So,
all right,
yeah.
Nina. Well, I love talking to you about this. And let's bring it full circle and tell everybody again about the raffle.
All right. So, yeah, in order to keep these programs going in Juneau, we do have to do fundraisers, and we do need support of Junoites. So this is one of the ways to do that. And you can also win some airline miles. So, yeah, again, if you're interested, it's through September 15th. You can win up to 100,000 Alaska Airlines miles. Or 50,000 or 25,000. So, yeah, if you're interested, come by the office. We're at 110 Seward Street. You can call 586-3350 or just look us up. We're the only Big Brothers Big Sisters office in Juneau, so we're easy to find.
All right. I wish you all the success with the summer raffle because it
thank
really
you.
Does support an important cause.
Yeah.
Lena Gilbertson, thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. At one time, only 15 whooping cranes remained in the world. Today, there are still fewer than 600. George Archibald is co-founder of the International Crane Foundation. We asked him what challenges whooping cranes and cranes around the world face.
It's all about habitat. I think that's the fundamental thing. If we can save these last great areas where the birds live so that they're not negatively impacted by the actions of man.
To thrive, cranes require grasslands and wetlands. In this way, cranes are ambassadors for the conservation of these habitats.
The general public can often take a great interest in helping the cranes because the size and beauty of the cranes are very compelling. And people know them. If you can conserve what the cranes need, everything else is benefiting.
And cranes need safety when they fly.
We've had a lot of our whooping cranes shot in our new experimental populations in Louisiana and in the Southeast. And now in Africa, trade has become a very ugly problem, whereby the cranes are captured and sold to wealthy people to decorate their estates in China and the Middle East, hundreds of them.
If you'd like to help cranes thrive, begin at our website, birdnote.org.
A Juno afternoon continues. It's 3:40 p.m., and my next guest is just getting seated here, and he's Andy Klein. He's here to help celebrate the release of a new brew from Alaska Brewing Company, and boy, I've been waiting all show for you to show up.
Well, I love showing up with a little bit of, you know, and I know it's not me. You're not looking at my face. You're looking at...
Hi, Andy.
You're looking into a red crab here on the
nice.
Face of the Imperial Red that I brought in. Yeah.
All right, and our station talent manager, Jeff Brown, is also
He always
in here.
Lingers around when I open up the beer bottles. It's funny how Jeff shows up.
This is great here. We love this.
Hey, Jeff, I have one more glass in that room right there. Just go grab it, and we'll get one more for you. Yeah, we're really excited. We got another, you know, we have this pilot series. We were just talking about it as I was sitting down. We have our pilot series. It comes out 3 or 4 times a year. And it's an exciting time for us at the brewery because it's a time when we get to do kind of stuff a little bit outside of the mold of some of the regular beers that we often do. We use different flavorings. We might do fruit kind of flavorings or vegetable kind of flavorings, like the jalapeno IPA, which had the jalapeno peppers in it. Or we go with big beers, and that's what's going on with the Imperial Red.
Okay, and who started the pilot series, and how did that get going? How long ago have you been running
it? It's been going for about 3 years, I want to say. I think 3 or 4 years ago was the first kind of pilot series that came out. It came out as the result. We've always done the smoke porter in the 22-ounce bombers, you know, the kind of 22-ounce bottles. And that's a limited edition, separate from the pilot series. We call that a limited edition. Comes out November 1st of every year. But, you know, a number of years ago, just these wanting to experiment with a little bit bigger beers that we knew didn't really fit in a six-pack, but that people wanted on the shelves. So not just on draft, but people wanted kind of some bigger beers on the shelves or just experimental different types of beers on the shelves. And so that's how the pilot series came about. The idea is that it's piloting. It's actually floating it out there, seeing if people like it. It's a test run.
See if we get a decent response to it.
And also just getting it out there and with no idea that it might go into some other type of production at any point. But just hey, every now and then people get to hear it, get to taste it, and get to hear about it and get to, you know, see this fun beer coming up. Also, it's a time when we can experiment with beers which otherwise would be kind of economically not feasible for us to do in a larger run, because some of the pilot series beers are, frankly, pretty expensive to produce. They're high-level ingredients, lots of different types of maybe fairly exotic ingredients, that sort of thing. And that's when we were talking about the pilot series, the Baltic Porter.
Yes, that was my first encounter with the pilot series,
right,
with that one.
And that was a great beer.
It's delicious.
Yeah. First put out in 2009. So actually, I think I'm answering my own question about how long it's been. It's been at least 5 years.
That's when I got here in June.
Yeah.
It was 2009.
Yeah, and then it came out again in 2012. A fantastic beer, but fairly expensive to produce because it had a really fairly expensive malt build with pretty exotic malts in it. Then it had these added ingredients, like it has, cherries in it and those kinds of things, and it adds this flavor to it. One interesting side note on that, the Baltic Porter actually ages really well, except that because it has cherries in it, it has natural pectin in it, and so the bottom of the bottles or the bottom of the kegs ends up with kind of that pectin-y, like what's in jelly or jam. Kind of this little bit of a gelatinous thing happening on the bottom of the bottle. So if you pour out some Baltic Porter, number one, don't shake it up and pour it out slow, and don't be surprised if towards the end of the bottle you're getting a little bit more of a kind of a jelly kind of a consistency, and you might only end up being able to drink, 18 ounces of a 22-ounce bottle.
Okay. Yeah. Just in general, how many of the pilot series do you produce in the course of a year?
Typically 3 to 4. This year we're looking to produce 3 outside of Alaska and 4 inside of Alaska. We just did the run of the Raspberry Wheat, which is part of our pilot series, but that only went to Alaska.
Yeah.
And that, you've had that before, right? But that only went to Alaska. That's one of the ones that's a funny one. Inside of Alaska, people love it and, you know, appreciate it for what it is. Outside of Alaska, I think it gets lost a little bit in the ocean of fruit beers that are out there. And a lot of fruit beers that I've had out there are, you know, just, they're a little sweet. They're a little over the top on the fruit, and so our brewers really concentrate on the tartness of the raspberry and on just bringing out the raspberry flavor without going overboard on sweetness. And, you know, the other one that reminds me that Strawberry Blonde is actually just out right now, too, on Rough Draft. And if you haven't had the Strawberry Blonde, it's great. It's on the Growler Bar at the brewery. It's really good, too. But on draft only. It's part of our Rough Draft series.
All right.
So I know the real thing you're looking for is you want to hear this bottle popped open.
Well,
we want to get a little taste, right?
Well, another thing is before we do that,
okay.
Though, I wanted to ask about, you know, the normal beers that you have in, you know, that there are kind of regulars.
Yep, the year-round kind of series.
Okay. Did any of those start out as Rough Drafts?
Yeah, a few of them did. The White is maybe the biggest example of one that started out as a Rough Draft. It started out first on our one-barrel system. Tracy Bird was a brewer with Alaskan Brewing who's since retired, but he was one of the brewers that kind of really had this idea of doing a Belgian-style wit beer and experimented with it for a number of years on our one-barrel system, and then it scaled up to Rough Draft and eventually got into our year-round. The other one is the Free Ride APA, which at one point was called the Boogie Bitter, and was done as a Rough Draft for the Boogie Till You Puke party, which is done every year by the Southeast Panhandlers. The bikers in town do that every summer. And we were doing a beer for that, and we called it the Boogie Bitter. It's changed quite a bit since it was the Boogie Bitter, but the basic malt build has remained kind of the same on that beer, with a lot more hop flavors added in as well.
Yeah, there's been several IPA versions that have come out.
And the IPA, yeah, we just updated our IPA with the Icy Bay IPA, which has replaced the Alaskan IPA, which we've done since 2007. We updated it because we felt that the Alaskan IPA, which people love and I love, it just wasn't keeping up in the arms race of what was happening with IPAs out there. These West Coast IPAs are going really over the top with hop flavor and a little bit more bitterness is what people are looking for, especially outside of Alaska in their IPAs. And so to keep up with those kind of the Lagunitas's and the Green Flashes of the world, we were wanting to just update that a little bit, which has gone great, actually. There's been incredibly great response to that update, that Icy Bay update.
Okay, and while we're talking about IPAs,
yeah.
This is one of my favorites, is the Double Black IPA, the one with the two ravens on the cover.
The two ravens.
That is absolutely delicious.
People
it's
love
really
it.
Good.
Yeah, and that's coming back. That'll be out this fall, again, as part of our pilot series, so look for it starting in October. The Double Black IPA will be back out again.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a jump on that, because
yeah.
The last time it came out, it was almost gone every place within a matter of, I want to say days. It might have been out for about 2 weeks or so, but
yeah,
they disappeared.
They do. The fans of that one are true fans, and they hoard it.
Yeah,
so they get it.
It was gone. There was only one liquor store downtown
yeah.
that had like two or three bottles left.
Right, we love
so
hearing
I was
that
able
response.
To corner two bottles of it, and it was just, it's delicious. I mean, for anybody that's out there listening, if you like the IPAs, the Double Black IPA, when it comes out, is one of my personal favorites, and you will definitely love that one.
But the one we're here to taste is just released today. This is the first day of general release for the Alaskan Imperial Red. We've came out with this one time before, but this red is really nice because it's got this really interesting character for a red. Reds are typically fairly malty-style beers, and the hop build in this is actually a little bit brighter than a lot of reds. So there's Centennial, Citra, Meridian, and Summit hops in this that just sort of provide a pretty bright overtone of hops that you kind of don't necessarily expect from a red. And I think it adds a great character to it. So I'm cracking it open.
Let's go do
all right,
that.
Here it goes. Oh, there it is.
And some of the other ones in the craft
here.
Series that have been outstanding. Oh, there it goes.
Oh, yeah. Mm. There we go. That's Jeff gets
that's
it.
Class,
Jeff
that's class
gets
number
the first
one.
Oh, yeah. There we go. And cheers. Let me know what you think.
All right. It'll be about 2 seconds.
You can smell the hot
before it winds up here.
So that's a big, bold tasting beer.
Yeah, it's similar to the amber, but it's got a little bit more of a woodsy taste.
I think like a grassy wood piney thing going on there. Yeah, that's the hop. That's that hop build. I feel like it's got some similarities to our hopothermia. So when I taste our hopothermia and I taste this, but it's not as heavy on the hops as an IPA is. Although it's not far off from an IPA. The bitterness on it is a little bit lower. It's a more mellow beer, but it's got an 8.5% alcohol, so it's a serious big beer. It's a sipping beer.
That's a hefty alcohol concentration for a beer.
That's not far off a bottle of wine or something. So that's right.
That's actually really delicious.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so that's the Imperial Red. Available in the Pilot Series and on draft. You'll find it in bars around town, and you'll find it in stores throughout town right now, starting today. And it's definitely available out at the gift shop at the brewery as well. It's on tap out there, on the growler bar, and also in the 22-ounce bombers out there.
Yes, and you'll notice that it does have the crab on the label.
The king crab. People love the king crab label. Yep,
so, it's really delicious. It's good.
Yeah, thank you. And then the other thing that's just beautiful to me, it's just beautiful to look at, that kind of deep mahogany color. And
it has a similar consistency to the Birchbock, but the Birchbock was a lot sweeter.
The Birchbock was much sweeter, almost syrupy in a way. But you're right, that consistency, that bigness to it. I mean, I just feel like
the Birchbock, but the Birchbock is a much sweeter version of this.
That's right, or a barley wine or something like that. It's got that real creamy, big mouthfeel. But this has that nice bitter edge to it at the end, and those great hop aroma and a really good malt build. So it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah, that's outstanding. All right. Well, this is going to sell out quick, too. But
there you
go. Least I know about it, so I'm going to be out there quick and get a couple of bottles.
Yeah, and Strawberry Blonde, again, is around right now, too. People love when that comes out. Another sign of summer in Juneau when the Strawberry Blonde is out. And, lots going on.
Okay, one question that somebody had for me to ask you is, do you ever screw up a batch and have to dispose of it?
Yeah, that definitely happens. We try not to, and we have enough volume, especially for our main beers, that we can, if we have a batch that we feel like, the flavor on this isn't quite right, or there's not enough of this flavor or that flavor, we can mix two batches, and we can end up with a consistency from that. So we can do a lot. We can do a lot to
try
fix
and save it.
A batch, but there's certain points where we just say, you know what, this is not working anymore, and we do have to dispose of it. So that can happen. Yeah, that definitely can happen. It doesn't happen too often, luckily, because it's a big expense out the door if we do that.
Right.
But definitely can happen and has happened. And it definitely happens, especially on the one-barrel brews. You know, when we do these experimental brews, there's times what we do with that one barrel brew, we experiment with it and we keg that up and we put it in our break room. And then if it gets a good rating in the break room, we know, okay, we got something on our hands here. And if we don't, if no one drinks it, we know, okay, this one's not doing so well. So there's definitely been times on that one barrel brew we've said, this one's not worth going to the break room, we're not doing it. So that happens. It doesn't happen often, luckily, but it does happen. We're just really concerned with quality, so we never let something that we feel like is lower quality. We never let something like that out the door.
All right, Andy, and one last topic is brewery expansion.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's happening.
Do you want to talk a little
bit
more about
that? Sure, yeah. So we're really excited. We broke ground on it a couple of months ago. We have two buildings in at the brewery there that people are probably aware of in Lemon Creek, the main brewery building, and then across the street that was called Barrow Street used to be called Southeast Warehouse, and now it's the big, what we call Brew 2. It's where we assemble variety pack stuff and do a lot of warehousing, and it's also where we have some administrative offices. We're going to join those two buildings, so we're going to be able to drive a forklift from one end of the Brew 1 brew house to all the way to the other end of the Brew 2 brew house. That'll allow for a lot of efficiency and also will allow for us to take the canning line, and people have maybe seen our cans around town here. We want to expand that out. We are only doing two varieties of cans right now, and we're only able to do them to Alaska. because we're so cramped in our space that we can't run our canning line at full efficiency. So once we get that canning line with a little bit of space around it, we'll be able to run that at a higher efficiency, and that's going to be a big plus for us as well. Maybe doing a few more varieties and maybe being able to expand out to a few more states with cans.
All right, acquisition of additional property, how long do you think this is going to be sustainable at the capacity you're going to want to run, for how long before you're going to be looking for another site?
This allows us to not have to look for another site for the foreseeable future.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so it allows us to expand our brew house operations for the foreseeable future, and that was something that was a big reason why we wanted to expand in the location that we were able to expand in. And that was that happened because the city allowed us to vacate Barrow Street. And so that was a big step for us, and we're excited about that. Should maybe be happening sometime beginning of next year, February, March, somewhere in that area. We should be actually have a roof on it and able to operate out of there.
All right. Well, Andy Klein and the Imperial Red Release and the Pilot Series. God, this is just delicious.
So glad you like it.
I'm hoping you have a lot of success, and this thing will probably fly off the shelves too, because it is really good.
Great to hear it. Thanks.
Thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today. Okay, a big thanks to Andy Klein from the Alaska Brewing Company for that sample of the Imperial Red. Take it from me, that is actually really delicious. All right, and we'll be back here in just a moment to conclude the show.
July, Juno. Perseverance Theater is celebrating the kickoff of Summerfest this week. Three plays and a rotating calendar at the Jack downtown. Join us this holiday weekend by using the code CELEBRATION14 and save on these amazing performances. The Blue Bear, Warriors, and Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Three unique plays, three unique experiences built for you. PTAlaska.org or 463-TIXS for more information.
3:58 p.m. here in the capital city. Tonight's forecast, we're calling for mostly cloudy skies with some isolated rain showers and low temperatures in the low to mid-50s. Tomorrow's forecast is for mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and highs around 66. Light winds becoming variable to 10 miles an hour in the afternoon. We are broadcasting here on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. K200 also broadcasts on the following translators. In the Valley area and Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in to us on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also get us on GCI Digital Cable, Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard on 872. KXLL can be found at 873. I'll be with you tomorrow for Juneau Afternoon. Have a great day, everybody.
Israelis today mourned three teenagers.